You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You know, Aisha had to leave a little bit early. She had a prior engagement. Mm-hmm. We thank her for coming in. But I could not end this episode without reading just a few more choice quotes from director and writer and producer Kobe Libby, because I think a lot of the questions that people are asking about this movie can be answered by the man himself with a few choice quotes. So I want to start here and get your reaction to this, Cameron. So
let's go.
In many an interview, right, with a chuckle and a smile and a mischievous kind of like glint in his eyes, like white people specifically ask him, so the title of the movie, right, like, oh, like, has anybody asked you, like, how do I say that, or how do I, you know, are white people kind of, you know, caught off guard, you know, like, do they want to say Negro? Is it like, first of all, white people love saying nigger. Any invitation to say it, I'm saying this, Gary, not him. I'm saying.
Oh, okay. Oh my gosh.
This is me.
Y'all
this is
see
me.
My face. I was like, do I have to go beat Kobe Lilly? Kobe Lilly.
This is me. This is me prefacing now what you're about to hear. White people, they love doing that.
Yeah.
You don't have to give them an excuse to say it. There's not a. You don't have to. Oh, ooh, an invitation. Like, come on.
Even
dog.
The ones that say they don't want to say it, they want to say it even more.
That girl at the Kendrick Lamar concert.
Oh,
how many
ready.
Times had she had said that before she got on stage? She practiced.
And then
that.
She made the mistake twice. She was given a second chance.
So let's not be coy here and act like, oh man, you know, yeah, like what an unfortunate slip of the tongue if you actually said the magical association of magical niggers instead of Negroes. Like, I've heard it both ways. Let's put it like that. So but
I feel like the sad ticket taker probably said that too. He's like, I've heard it both ways.
But so each time he's asked this question, you know, because I mean, this is of course they're going to ask it. He goes on again, another kind of long drawn out answer. But he says that's deliberately part of the satire. He wanted to have kind of this inciting title that, you know, made white people uncomfortable, and then proceeded to link it to W.E.B. Du Bois's concept of double consciousness and said, welcome to double consciousness, white people, you know, having to navigate thinking about, you know, how you feel about something and how somebody else might feel about something. The problem is, again, our show, right, is called White People Won't Save You. That is intentionally provocative. We did that on purpose. But then also,
right,
what we do, I'm not trying to give us a big pat on the back here, but what we try to do on each episode is actually get into it and have conversations about it and break it down. This movie does not do that. And so you can't have a provocative title like that, then say, hey, you know, white people, like, what do you think of that? And then they come to the movie and they, and it's like not even nary a tooth to be found. You know what I mean? Like,
do you this think, movie's do you... goal is to keep white people happy, right?
Literally.
I feel like the movie is like, it functions as like this light course in racial politics, supposedly amongst black people, because there are no black people who like talk amongst themselves about what daily life is like. I mean, unless they're magical, so their daily life is like, you know, different than a regular person's, which is also apparently the worst thing that could happen to one of them is just living daily life like a normal black person, which, you know,
it's insane,
unfortunate for them. But that's the problem. Like, I mean, I said it, you know, earlier that we walk right up to the actual problem and like don't discuss it. This movie actually does white people a disservice because it could be a teaching tool, right? It could be, and it doesn't have to necessarily be a teaching tool, right? Because that's what we say, that's not our job. But if you're going to make a movie, like a mass entertainment for everybody, right? Black people aren't even 20% of the population. So if you're making this movie for everybody, you are taking on the task of teaching people, right? If you're asking this to be a big entertainment. And then what you proceed to do is not enlighten either white people or black people to either's behavior. There are no jokes about it. There are no, like, there's no witty repartee amongst white people about, like, how cool it is to be them, I guess, or, like, you know, how tough it is to be black in America. Before we get to any more quotes, I kind of wanted to ask you a question about the first scene in the movie. Or not the first scene, it's like the second scene of the movie, where he's kind of, so Justice is in an alley by himself using an ATM, and, you know, he ain't got no money in his account, so he walks away, and who walks up behind him but a white woman who so drunk apparently that she can't use the ATM by herself. Now, any black person in this situation knows exactly what's up. This is a setup. It's not good. Somebody else is playing the other part, and you're going to get either arrested or jumped. Something's bad, right? The movie proceeds to go through the situation, right? He's, again, apologetic black man, so he's like, all right, I'll hold your purse. I'll even put your ATM card in the slot. And then when the girl is, again, drunk, turns around and notices, or doesn't notice, that her card is still in the ATM, and she's like, well, where's my ATM card? Call my big strong boyfriend over here. Hey, boyfriend, this black man is holding my purse, and I think he put my ATM card, you know, in his pocket somewhere. And, you know, fight's about to start. But then pops up David Alan Greer as a magical Negro and poofs both the ATM card and her purse back in her hands and kind of tells them to go fuck off somewhere. Now, this situation is, like, obviously a setup, right? It's the second scene in the movie for a reason. It's explaining, like, everyday terror for a black person, right? Even in a situation where we're supposed to be, like, if you're just being a normal human, you're just being helpful, right? But then proposes that this is nefarious. But then the movie, again, walks right up to the point. Was she being nefarious? What was her actual intent? Was she actually drunk? Her boyfriend was right over to the side, ready to beat this guy's ass into a pulp. But luckily for him, a magical Negro was around to help his black ass in this situation. Did you catch that as, like, the setup that it was?
This is another movie. We haven't released the episode yet, but we talked about La La Land recently. This is another movie where this is not something that I believe people in LA do. He left the venue and then proceeded to walk several blocks to, I guess,
to where?
Home, and takes a detour into an alley. To do what I think you could do on your phone, check your account balance. You could have just looked that up and said, damn, I'm broke, and kept it moving. Why would you go into an alley at night in LA
to an
ATM machine, which, how the fuck is that even there? I mean, was it? I don't even know in relation to what it is placed there for. It just seemed like it was Chekhov's ATM machine so that he could have this interaction.
You're right. But it's like the movie understands that that's a fucked up situation to be in. The movie, like, set all the pieces for us, right? It's an alley in LA at night. We don't what have if he to had know
just,
much but
he
more.
Could have just gone outside. Like, that scene is set up easily if he leaves the venue, goes around the corner to do just that. Instead, he walks to go for at least 7 to 8 minutes.
Right, that's somewhere. The whole opening credit scene is him walking through LA at night, which is, again, something no one does.
Look, theoretically he could live close by, I guess, but, like, I assume LA very much is like New York, only in the sense that, like, if I said here in Baltimore, oh, I live like 3 blocks away, like, okay, that's just, you just walk all over. Bet. If I'm in New York and I tell you, Cam, I'm like 8 blocks away, you're like, oh, 30 minutes?
Not wrong.
In LA, it's even worse because nothing is near anything. Everything is so set up. So like, where is he walking to? But I understand what you're saying in the sense of like, this moment is supposed to make you get on the side of David Alan Greer and like magical Negroism, I guess, in that like it's a net positive, like it is helping, even though again I think David Alan Greer is breaking the rules as I understand them, because you're never supposed to use magical Negro powers to help yourself or black people. It's only in service of white people. So here he's doing something in service of another black person, and I think that's got to be a demerit, right? Like his ass is getting kicked out. I don't know, but
I like that you think the society is organized enough to like impose demerits on people.
I also really don't understand the hierarchy. I don't understand the hierarchy of like, because he's not in charge. Nicole Byers
is
in charge.
He's not. He's like a regular. I thought he was like a captain.
He's got an office, maybe, so you know? I don't know where he is. He's like a field agent or some shit. This is also
not a foot soldier.
Yeah, but he's still got clients, so it's not it's not described to us in any way. We're assuming this is at least a national organization. I don't understand if Nicole Byer is the president of the Los Angeles, California subsect or the whole thing. It's not. It's never. Made clear. But yeah, this scene definitely feels like it's supposed to be, because this is how he ropes him in, but it almost does feel like he got set up by the society itself to fall into a situation in which David Alan Greer could then prey upon him to work his magic and then recruit him. But a lot of the scenes in this movie also don't make sense in any logical way. So
there's no real clarity throughout.
Yeah, it never that didn't jump out to me in the sense of like, huh? You know, because I think a lot of the movie was just, huh? Like, the movie was just, what's happening?
nothing is the actual good metaphor for anything throughout the movie, right?
No.
As Aisha said earlier, there's Justice Smith's character is like making yarn sculptures at the top of it. And it's not like it's a particularly African-American yarn experience, or I don't know, like it stands for anything about him. I would say like yarn is like softish art, and homeboy is a little bit of a softy. Like I don't even think it stands for that either.
That's
like nothing throughout the movie is commentating on anything. It's just arbitrary people and situations put together to like convey the message.
Let me read you another quote here, because I think what you're hitting on is something that I also have a lot of questions about, because it's interesting the trajectory of American fiction in this movie, in the sense that American fiction is this movie is intentionally riding its coattails. And I mean, obviously, like these movies were, I guess, in production at the same time, but are definitely not in conversation with each other. And I don't know how much, you know, there was any, what studios were thinking in terms of release. But like the marketing for American Negroes is very much so trying to be like, did you like American Fiction? We're kind of the same thing. Why don't you come over here and watch this movie? Except that people saw American Fiction and liked it. And so they're holding this movie to that standard. And they're like, oh, this is trash. Like American Fiction is much better. I don't like this. So that's hurting it. But then also, in a weird, this is kind of an aside, it's like now this movie is propping up American Fiction to a point that I'm like, let's pump the brakes a little bit. Like, you know, it's not the greatest movie ever made. But I think in reflection to this, it is very much doing all of the things this movie doesn't even dare to do. But they do share a similarity in that all of American Fiction, I was like, I want to see Monk talk to another black person. Specifically, I want to see him talk to somebody who liked his book and have a conversation with them and see
with somebody that the piece affected them. and affected their like lifestyle.
Because the movie, I think, intentionally goes around and creates a situation in which he's not accessible, you know, so he's doing a lot of these interviews incognito and like not able to really talk about it. But I wanted to see, because clearly Monk has insecurities and issues surrounding his blackness, right? And it's never said out loud. He never has a conversation about it, but he does bring up a lot of how he's not, he doesn't like how people view him in a certain light and like put his work in the, you know, black section of the bookstore just because he's a black man and, you know, all these other things. In this movie, Aaron clearly has issues and insecurities surrounding his blackness. Never once does he talk to any other black people, not even about what it's like to be black, but his experience as a black man. He makes a lot of aspersions to feeling unsafe and not liking how white people look at him. And it's not like I need him to give another monologue speech about how, you know, this one time he was working at a bookstore or whatever, yada, yada, yada. But like, I don't know what he thinks about black people.
Right.
I don't have a clue.
The like you said earlier, he's a one-dimensional character, Aaron. But so is everyone else.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone, every character. I'm talking all the magical Negroes in the society, the love interest, the, you know, dopey white dude that works at the job. All this stuff is, like, not cooked. So they're presented as, like, baseline, you know, avatars for ideas. That's why I kind of harp so much about like the colorism a little bit, because it's like if you're going to display them as just simply avatars to explain ideas, then they got to look like the ideas you're talking about, because otherwise it gets the motive gets muddled. If you're talking about I put a woman of color in this film as the love interest, well now I'm thinking it's like, oh well, she's not white, she's half white, it seems. She seems like she's half Asian. So wait, what's your point? You know, the point starts to decrease, or like the point gets dulled a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think it all comes down to this right here, which is basically,
I know writers who use subtext, and they're all cowards.
Right, like that's what it feels like. He's just like. You know, but it's almost the reverse, because he's like, this is all, it's not even subtext or text. It's kind of like a mid-text, like,
right.
Glossed over text, like, you know, because the parts where he needs to put the text in, he doesn't. Yeah. And the parts where he approaches the text are often played for laughs or humor, which don't land. So then like the movie is just kind of this weird amalgamation of moments where it's like, I think you're trying to talk about something, but you're not explicitly saying that thing. And so I, as the audience member, am having to fill in the blanks, which is not my job, because you're supposed to, you know, like you don't have to spoon feed me, but you also can't come around on the back end and be like, so the movie is about, it's like, brother, I watched the movie. Like
I watched the movie you gave me.
there's nothing in there. You can't tell me on the other side about all these other things that you want to say. Like you made it. You should have said it in the piece. Like
in the movie.
So
don't give me like don't screen the movie and then at the end it's like external reading.
Yeah. Speaking of things he said, let me read you these two quotes. Because I think they will help fill in some of the blanks that you may be trying to fill in. So his insight behind the film, right? He says, it's not just a takedown of that trope, but it's also a way for me as a writer-director to explore some particular defense mechanisms I was taught in response to racism. In another interview, he goes on to say, that's part of the critique too, is that these defense mechanisms I was taught that America and structural racism encourage in us black people, they don't feel good to us. Obviously, they also ultimately won't keep us safe. And that's part of the critique of the film, is that being a magical Negro, even if the society asks you to do that, is not ultimately a way to keep you safe, because these forces are too powerful and too dangerous. Where is that in the movie?
Wow.
In the movie, David Alan Greer is, I believe, to be like in his 60s. Obviously, this has been keeping his ass safe, because he's still here. all these other Negroes don't really seem to have any problems. They just have mild irritation about having to be in such proximity with annoying white people. But like never is it like, oh man, my life is in danger. My loved one's life is in danger. Yeah. Or even like I'm in a situation that's like totally unfair and unjustified simply because of my race. Like it seems like life is great for them. So
yeah, it seems like the stakes are a little low.
Yeah. But that's the thing. So if you're telling me that you're telling me that being a magical Negro is not helpful and it's a self-serving thing that doesn't keep you safe, but then I'm watching the movie and the movie's telling me actually being a magical Negro is a good thing because it does keep you safe and is better than 100 marches. What are you telling me? How am I supposed to receive that information? This is where I think you're going to perk up a little bit, Cameron. Because on the origins of the film, this is what he had to say. Okay. And this is in that IMDb Pro interview. He said, I thought it would be a sketch or something around 2.5 minutes, because that's usually how long something like this would be. And the way I sort of describe it is I came up for air a couple hours later when I started writing it, and I sat back from the desk and I was like, what am I working on? Because I sort of realized I was attacking something more personal than attacking the trope. And what I believe I was exploring, and what I believe the film ultimately is about, is this very particular defense mechanism that I was taught as a black person about how to survive in America, which is to make powerful white people feel comfortable. And the most explicit example of this, which is tangible to a lot of black folks, is when my dad sat me down as a kid and said, this is how you act around the police to stay alive. You don't worry about your pride. You don't worry about those other things. You just keep yourself safe. You're nice, you're polite, you say sir, you do all these things, and I believe personally this is my particular black experience, not anybody else's, not necessarily, but I overlearned those lessons, right? And I believe they influenced the way that I move through the world and how I relate to white people and the way I take up space. And in that way, I'm sitting here sort of attacking those magical Negro tropes. Oh, those black people who are only focused on white people and hyper-focused on white comfort. And I find myself identifying with them in this very troubling way. So I say it's cathartic, but also a very troubling and quite embarrassing thing to see in myself in the process of writing this art. And ultimately, part of what I'm interested in this film is both to sort of forgive myself for having overlearned that lesson, offer that same grace to other black people or people of color who might have overlearned that lesson too, but more importantly, to shift the blame, right? Because it's not my fault that my dad had to teach me defense mechanisms to navigate this country. And when we talk about the sort of peculiar bounces of the ball of racism creates, me having shame about these things that I'm doing moving through the world that are all downstream of those absolutely destructive power structures, that to me, there's no instructive and not often talked about in regards to racism and highlighting those aspects of the structural problem, right? So again, that's he's saying a lot of things all at once. But what I'm getting from there is that he identifies with them
100%,
yes. And was kind of like, oh no, like I feel like I might like be a magical Negro, you know, so to speak, but then in critiquing it couldn't cross the line of actually doing the work, because then he'd be talking about himself.
Yes. it sounds like he should have done that. Like, yeah, he got right up against the wall multiple times and just didn't do it. It's crazy. Look, he looks like he finds himself apologizing for like white power structures a lot. And it's like, you got the opportunity to make a movie. And you said that when it got a little too close to home, you had to back up. What kind of horse shit is that? Like, what? The point of making movies is to extend the message, is to say have a message. Movies are propaganda in a sense. The point is, like, somebody had an idea, wanted to convey said idea to a mass audience and use sound and vision to accomplish that. You saw sound and vision, Kobe Libby, and was like, you know what? Let me ask my white friend first. Get the fuck out of here.
Well, here's the thing, because I want to extend on what you just said, right? Like, movies are not reality. In reality,
1,000%.
I
got to
deal with all this shit. This is, you know.
Except for documentary.
Right. I have to deal with all this
shit. No, I'm just being stupid. Go ahead.
This is my life. These are the things that I see every day, right? And so it's not even to say that I don't want to see them reflected back to me in fiction, but it's to say that you're making this shit up. It could be as big. It can be as crazy. It can be as over the. Who said it, you're talking about feeling shrunken in and like you're not able to take up the amount of space that you want to in a movie? You can do that, especially when it's your movie. You can take up as much fucking space as you want. So
it's
why
your fucking movie?
why not take the? I mean, literally. That's what it's for. That's what stories are for. When black people used to sit around in slavery times and tell themselves the story of the flying Africans, they were telling themselves a story about escaping from slavery and going home.
Even they understood metaphor.
They didn't say, hey, what about like the walking faster than normal Africans? They said, we're going to fly back to Africa.
The Africans that was a little fast.
Like, why put a cap on it? Why stop? Why limit yourself in this space where you don't have to do that? You know what I mean?
You like, literally, if you're saying that one of your characters just automatically likes the love interest, then why don't you have Justin Smith say he wants to be president and put him in the fucking White House? Like, you could do whatever you wanted to. And you took the opportunity to limit not only your scope, but the scope that people would see the movie, or hopefully would see the movie and want to extend on your idea, extend on your thesis that you're, you know, hoping to bring, right?
Well, and that's
you created a world where you were about to have a conversation and you stopped your own conversation.
You stopped your own conversation, and like the way that it plays out ultimately, as we're seeing right now, this movie, and again, I'm not saying these things with glee, or I'm not saying these things to dunk on it even more. It's got a 30% on Rotten Tomatoes. It has made a little over $1 million at the box office. And I know this movie didn't cost $1 million. So like, it costs more than that. So like, that's a lot of money to make up, you know. And like, typically what we see opening weekend, like that's the weekend. From here, downhill. Like, I don't think you're going to make another million. I think you're only going to make less money. You can maybe hope to get some of that back on the streaming, but like, even then, like, you're going to have to hope that people buy the movie or at least rent it. Yeah. So like, now you're in a situation in which you've kind of like, it's the whole hole, you know what I mean? Like, as a director and a writer, like as a debut, like this is not the way to come out the gate. But it's also
That's what you gotta stand on.
But it's like, why not come out swinging? Like, a lot of people would take that opportunity and be like, they might not make my black ass make another movie, so I'm gonna make the craziest shit that they'll, you know, get away with. Donald Glover came to FX and said, hey, this show Atlanta, it's about black people rapping in Atlanta. And then he made the show and they were like, that's not what this is about. And he was like, nigga, too late. I already filmed season.
But look at all these people that are talking about the show, though. Look at all this conversation. Look how much people like the show,
right? It's not to say play with these people's money, but it's to say if they're giving you the money, they already greenlit. I don't think the movie got greenlit without the title. I think part of what happened was they were like, this is going to be another Get Out situation. Like, we're going to take advantage of this. Like, we could just put it out with our name on it and take credit for whatever. But
the success, the hopeful success that it had.
Yeah. What happened was, now we're in a situation where all the people who are predicated to not like this movie, all of, again, the Jason Whitlocks and Candace Owens and, you know, people crying about CRT and all that bullshit. So like, they're already out. They're already like, fuck this movie, culture wars, you know, I'm going to die on that hill. But now black people don't like this movie. And that's a problem.
Not good reason.
Yeah, that's an issue. Like, if this movie was fine, right? out of 10, if it was a 6, that's enough. Black people would be upset about it. They'd be like, I wanted more. It's all right. But like, all right, he tried. He did a little something. Like, go Kobe. You know, like, we are rooting for you. We do not Trust. Want bad black art specifically on a every, big genre scale.
Every time.
We would like it every to at time. Least be I. Because I at least gives us the caveat of like, well, you know, maybe the studio didn't let him do, you know, what he really wanted to do. So he kind of, from the quote, it sounds like this is the movie he wanted to make.
Wanted to make.
That's me feel
that's, something. That's the worst part. Yeah. That's the worst part about all of it is that he seems content. And like, also it seems like everybody who made the movie seems content.
Justice Smith said that
David Allen,
this is the movie he wishes that he would have seen as a kid because it would have helped him
get out of here.
I'm just reading quotes.
That's he don't wish that. He wishes that because the director looks like him, which is, hey, I get it.
They made that joke a lot on the press tour too. That,
I did see them talk about that in the Sundance interview, and it seemed like, yeah, they had like some kind of you know, they felt kindred spirits about this artwork, particularly this movie, so much so that like what Justice said, he like was interested in it 4 or 5 years earlier when mm-hmm. he was like a young adult and not really like in a place to like actually be a part of it,
yeah,
and so waited to be in this. He waited, he took time, was taken, sure, drafts of the script were made, and they both were like, yes, this is you doing the work.
Maybe needed like another draft or two before he got to the shooting stage.
This is Kobe doing work.
Let me see if there is one more. I mean, he's got some other quotes here that I could read, but I don't necessarily feel like they'll shed more light than Well, I guess I'll read this last quote. This is in relation to the trailer, but I think it is also in relation to the movie now that it's out. And, you know, people were asking him about the reaction to the trailer. Again, people saw the trailer. A lot of people not interested. You know, a lot of people were like, wait a minute, this doesn't seem like what we were here to see. What happened? And so he said, this is before the movie came out. He says, look, we're a small black independent film at the end of the day. I'm just excited people are talking about it. Every year I have friends who make beautiful films that land with absolute silence. So I'm just excited for there to be some conversation about it. And look, in terms of some of the anger about it, I really, really understand it because I too am extremely skeptical of the stories Hollywood tells about black people. I made a movie about the magical Negro trope. It's like, I'm aware that we dropped the ball in Hollywood, but that's a suspicion that I think is also reasonable. And some of the conversations that have come out are also really important conversations that I'm excited for the black community to have, for the wider American community to have. And all I hope is that the movie is that the really vibrant conversation that got kicked off by the trailer, people will go see the movie, which I think is more nuanced and a more nuanced engagement with a lot of those topics. And then they'll pick up that conversation on the other side and they may feel the exact same way or they may not, but I want it to lead to a real conversation. That's my hope based on some of that initial reaction. Again, he talks in circles sometimes about a lot of these things, but I think what's like, you're talking about conversation and you're talking about getting eyes on the movie and you're talking about, you know, well, if people like basically like hate it or love it, you know, here's my movie, like, you know, like,
right.
talk, but like we've said before, not really much to talk about. You know what I mean? Like in terms of the movie, like the conversation is largely what was left unsaid, what was left out of the movie, which speaks more than the actual movie itself. The actual movie itself, like we said, Aisha saw this at Sundance. You saw it. How many people were in your theater?
I'd say about 12. Three of them were white.
I saw this in the theater with 8 other people. 2 of them are white. Aisha said there was, it was Sundance. There was a lot of white people there. No laughter. What conversations are people having after this movie other than I didn't really like that movie? Like, it's not
hugs and groans.
You know what I mean? Like, I think that's the thing for you to have, like, for example, I know a lot of people were polarized by the end of Sorry to Bother You. They were like, where the fuck did this horse people thing come from? Like, this is a wild. But the movie was provocative in a lot of ways. And I'm sure once people left, whether they were like, I like that ending, or they're like, I don't understand anything that happened after that point. Like, there's still a lot of conversation to have because there is a lot of text in the movie, right?
Within, through the middle part, through, I mean, we literally all the way up until the end. This, I mean, yeah, of course, is a little tough to grasp, but that whole movie is cooking.
Yeah.
Throughout.
He's swinging for the fences on every scene, on everything that he's doing.
Pretty much.
You know what I mean? Like Tessa Thompson at her art show, you know, like.
With the anti-capitalist art.
Like, we're having all of these conversations. The thing about this movie, some people were saying, oh, he's trying to do too much with the rom-com and the, you know, magical. But like, he doesn't do either. Like, the romance is half-baked and kind of feels like it's there from another movie or a previous draft and it just didn't get cut out. The magical Negro stuff isn't the trope at all, because magical Negroes don't benefit from being around white people. If anything, they lose themselves to whiteness. So
literally, in both Bagger Vance and the Green Mile, they both either die or disappear.
Yes. So again, that's another funny thing to play with, is like Justice Smith is fading away, you know, the longer that he's doing this job, because he's ceasing to exist because he's a magical Negro. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing they don't tell you about, is that there's a timeline on it. Like, the longer you do it, the less, you know, you become normal SpongeBob and like all the edges get smoothed away or whatever, you know what I mean? But like,
right.
Like that's not this movie. So like, what do you think ultimately coming out the other side? People had thoughts on the trailer, you know, we're hoping they're wrong. The movie's out now. People are feeling how they're feeling about it. Like, do you think, and this is, I mean, again, we're not casting judgment on the cast or the director or anything like that, but more so asking, like, is this a movie that now Hollywood looks at and says, oh, they didn't like that, so we're just not going to take a chance on another magical Negro, you know, like black genre piece, because that's going to, they've resoundingly said no, even though we're not saying no to that, we're saying no to this movie. Or do you think it's gonna be like a footnote that people are like, remember that crazy magical Negro movie from like 5 years ago?
I really hope the latter. I really you know, it sucks that this is the outcome for this, that I just want it to go away. We talked about it here. Please, like, read Aisha's article or review on NPR. And I would say, you know, to anybody watching the movie, or at least watched the movie or was interested up until this point, like, take part in some of the discourse. Like, check it out. See what people are talking about with, you know, the employment of tropes like this, just in general. Because the movie, that's the only thing the movie is really talking about, is, like, the employment of the trope.
Yeah.
Everything else is like, I just wish this would fucking stop. Like, I just don't, I didn't, I wish we don't talk about this movie. I don't want, like, end of 2024, you know, we're putting this in even like the worst of montages or nothing like that. I don't want to hear about it, because A, straight up boring, right? Yeah. As a boring movie, we could just forget about it. But B, as a movie that's like trying to be part of like the African American cinematic universe, if you want to do that. But like, if it's part of the legacy, I don't want it to be part of the legacy. How about that? I don't want it to be, because it's not committing to anything. It has no real point of view other than like, like black injustice is a thing. And white people, you know, taking credit for black injustice is also a thing. Other than that, what do we got? We got nothing. There's no meat on the bone.
Yeah.
And the meat on the bone is kind of embarrassing.
Well, and I mean, again, like, there's moments in this
movie. And under research or underemployed also.
Under research, underemployed. There's a moment in this movie where, like, they make a cop happy, which was like,
two scenes worth too.
What
two scenes to get that point across?
What are we, why, what is this, who is this for, you know what I mean? Like, there's,
and the punchline was not even a punchline.
No, there's a scene where Justice Smith is in the bathroom and there's like a magical hand shining his shoes. There's a scene.
How the fuck? Honestly, I didn't even know how the fuck to feel about that, because I was, by the time it had happened and the gag was over, I was like, "Am I mad?"
Yeah,
I don't know if I like that. Why would the magical society? Why would the Society of Magical Negroes have like Coonan shit like around their building? Like, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well,
if anything, I don't know. I don't know. That's messy. That's that didn't, that hurt.
Yeah.
Honestly, that joke alone was like, dog, this is, that's not it. Oof.
You know, and then you can't,
the cool's got me confused.
You can't tell me the biggest injustice of this movie, you can't tell me, is not the end of the film. I mean, this is where we're going to end, wrap it up, because we could talk about this movie for 6 hours and we're never going to get to the end of it. But the this is the end of the movie, okay, or one of the climactic scenes. So Justice Smith is giving his whole big speech to Jason and like told off the people. I mean, we can slide aside again. It's, this is a bad movie and a bad movie. Like, it's a bad movie, like in the sense of like, it's boring and not enjoyable in any of the ways that it's supposed to be. And it's a bad movie in that, like, it doesn't function as a film coherently. So, like,
yeah,
there's a whole subplot or thing happening with the owner of what is called Meatbox, which I couldn't tell if there was supposed to be some kind of joke in that.
Yeah.
I didn't understand. I don't know what it had to do with nautical or anything. I'm not, it's very confusing. But like, oof, they have not, they got in trouble because their facial recognition technology didn't recognize Black people, nor the entire country of Ghana. And then there's like a Ghanaian,
which
man,
were both decent setups.
Yeah.
I thought they were decent setups. Like, you could do something with that.
And there's,
those could be good jokes.
Yeah. But then there's never even a critique of social media or like tech culture. Like, he's just, he just works there.
Yep.
So, yep. But he does this whole thing. He transports Lizzie away, strands her on the Empire State Building, comes back to the Society of Magical Negroes. He had all of these things to say to these white people. Gets back to the society. Nicole Bayer's like, bye. And he's like, you're right.
Get out of here, yeah.
He's like, you are right. I have to leave now. He doesn't say, oh, no, that was for them. This part's for you. Let me tell you about all of the bullshit that's going on here that I don't like.
Wouldn't that be fucking crazy if that's like how the movie ended? He was like, whoa, go, I know you're going to kick me out. Hold on. That's the bullshit. What I really think is,
you know what I mean? Because,
and then the movie would have ended. Actually, I would have ended the movie on that. That would have been crazy.
Look, I mean,
like, he was about to say like that real Malcolm X shit. Like, right, we don't need Black white people about that. You know,
Black people are not a monolith, but Black people know how to leave a job. If you've ever seen a Black person get fired, especially in a Black space, in a white space sometimes, but in a Black space, You think Justice Smith is just going to leave
the job? You're going to be talking about Justice Smith for the next like 6 months. You're like, remember when he left? Remember when he got fired?
Like, he would have, he had nothing for them. He just walked away. Hey, yeah, I know I fucked up. I broke all the rules. I guess I'll leave now. Goes out and is talking to David Alan Grier. What you think is going to happen is David Alan Grier is going to be like, you know what? That shit's fucked up, man. You know what I mean? I heard what you said. That resonated with me, you know, like, I spent my whole life, you know, doing this and like serving these people. And like, it's never really sat right in my soul. And like, what you said really, no, he's like, well, I guess I got to fucking erase your memory now. So why don't you stand still?
And literally with a boop.
Men in Black, you hear. And the only reason he doesn't do it is because he literally can't. He tries multiple times. Like, he's not like, you know what, brother? I'm just gonna let you, this one's on me. You know what I mean? I'm gonna let you go. You know, tell him I tried. No, he's like, I intend to go through with this. I actually want to do it. I just literally can't do it right now. You know, so that part, then
see ya.
Justice Smith is like, well, what are you gonna do now? And he's like, I guess keep cooning. Like, he's like, I think I'll just keep doing exactly what I've keep been doing.
What I do.
We'll have to rebuild the society. He's like, you know, some of those uppity Negroes got ideas about you know, self-respect and shit now, so we might have to clear them out. But we're just gonna keep doing this. Nothing has changed.
Yeah, no, I need to like sweep up at the society when I get back. I got work to do.
You know what I mean?
That disembodied hand can't do it all.
So it's like we literally how movies work and stories work is that characters go on a journey, and then on the other side, something has changed. Either they've gotten what they wanted, either they learned what they wanted wasn't what they really want, whatever, right? David Ellinger starts here, ends here. It's the same. Yeah. Nothing's changed. Justice Smith was a little bit too timid about talking to white people. He told one white person off. I don't know if anything has changed in him generally. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't leave the society with Wretched of the Earth in hand. Like, I think he's about the same as where he started. Just a little bit.
That would be great if that's the book they gave out. Don't forget, this money ain't shit.
Right. But it's like, so what? What? What is the mess? What is the end of this movie? Like, it's so.
What's the message? That exactly. That was my biggest problem. I left and I was like, well, what did that movie even want to say to me? Because honestly, it just felt like it happened.
Yes.
The last several events that you just went over are like the last thing, and then the button with the homegirl.
Yeah.
She's part of the society of supportive wives and girlfriends. Worst ending ever.
Boo.
So swag.
Yeah.
But those last like couple moments like amount to absolutely nothing. Like actually nothing emotionally, actually nothing like plot wise, right? Because again, like you said, hero's journey, both main characters end up exactly where they started at the end, except now Justice is like haphazardly a magical Negro, but doesn't really want to do it anymore. So he probably won't even involve himself with the society any further.
Yeah.
It's like, we did all this for him to get talked over.
Yeah.
When he made his own self-realization, when he was actually self-actualizing, he was still being talked over, which honestly, if played better and edited better, could have been a funny gag, because literally, what do white people do when black people are trying to talk about, you know, how uplifted they may feel? Try to usurp the situation. It was literally that, but it's edited to shit. You can't actually tell that that's the intention behind the scene, or that's the intention of the gag, which is, again, the downfall of the whole movie, because all the intention behind the gag is, like, you know, diffused by poor filmmaking, half-assed choices, unresearched shit. Just a missed opportunity, but like, you can tell the white people who funded this movie were like, we own a song.
They thought something was about to happen, and now
dollar signs, baby. Like,
blocked his number. we're good on that. Because I will leave with this. You know, this is my final piece. If you want to say something, you know, feel free to say something too. But like, sure. I think, you know, for movies like this, again, we as a black community can't not say something. You know what I mean? And like, obviously, there was a lot of talk about, well, like throughout the whole press tour, you know, but before the Sundance thing and even after the Sundance thing a little bit, like there seemed to be some defensiveness from the cast and crew about, well, people haven't seen the movie yet, so like everybody's all upset, they're saying this, they're saying that, they're doing this, they're doing that. And it's not to say that you should judge every movie by the trailer, right? But it is to say that, like,
I don't want to.
Well, like, yes, the suspicions bore out, but like, we don't have to take this as, you know, film goers and movie watchers. Like, if you see some bullshit, call it some bullshit, and then if they can prove otherwise, happy to see it. But
right,
you know, fair. What I mean, like, I don't feel like anybody was unwarranted and unjustified in their feelings based on the trailer, because a trailer is supposed to sell you on the movie. It's literal marketing, literally. And even if there's a twist, remember the trailer to Get Out? That didn't give away the movie.
Yes.
That just made you want to see the movie. You know what I mean? Like, it said, hey, something's not right here. Wonder what it could be. Gonna have to see Get Out if you want to figure out.
But what's up. The thing.
This movie was like, actually,
that's the thing, though. Nothing. That movie acknowledged that something's wrong. This movie.
So
this movie doesn't acknowledge that anything's wrong. The only thing that's wrong in this movie is that white people are a little too uncomfortable.
A little too, and again, I mean, I can't push back against that concept enough. That white discomfort is, they are very comfortable. They're very comfortable. They're not. I mean, it's if anything, it's just general white indifference, right? Like general white indifference to black lives and existence. Let's never. This is why I get so upset with this movie and movies
this
like
why
this.
I'm so fucking.
Never forget that white people quite literally would lynch a black person from a tree, light their bodies on fire, dismember them, sell those body parts as souvenirs, and also sell pictures. And these were family events the community would
some
come
of your
out
grandparents
to.
Out there still got the lynching. They got the lynching family reunion photo. You know they do.
That's not because white people were uncomfortable. They meant to do that. That wasn't a mistake. That wasn't, oops, I got a little too upset and went too far. That was
100%.
That was meant to be. Those people spitted on Ruby Bridges. They were not they were uncomfortable with a black girl going to school. What? Whose fault is that? What are you suggesting to me by making a movie where white people's discomfort is my greatest fear? I'm not scared that white people aren't comfortable. You know what I mean? I understand that they are. If they were uncomfortable, something would have happened. They seemingly are very comfortable in their position. The thing
they're doing okay.
The thing that upsets the balance is when black people start to speak up about these situations. And again, that's why it's insane for them to put Crispus Attucks in this movie as a pillar of,
to even invoke him.
Like,
yeah.
Again, a man who escaped from slavery and tried to fight white people in Boston. Huh?
They should have just said that.
I'm not connecting these dots, but
they should have just said that. That would have been freaky enough for the white people in the audience to be like, oh my God, really? There's a person like that existed?
But I guess to bring all this home is to say that, like, movies like these, I'm not necessarily going to say that they are destructive in the sense of, like, like Driving Miss Daisy and movies that actually are doing the magical Negro trope are definitely more heinous and harmful in the sense that they are big budget movies that win awards and have prestige and, you know, have replay value. And people look back to them as lessons about race relations and like all of this stuff. Right. I don't think anybody's going to watch the American Society of Magical Negroes and be like, I learned something or this is how I should
I hope they didn't. Yeah, right.
About in the world. right? So like I'm not even giving it that power, but it is to say that as a Black consumer and a viewer and a critic of art, right, like if you have the opportunity to make something, all I'm asking, make something for us, right? Make something for us, for me to watch, you know? Like, don't make a movie where you tell me that the worst possible punishment that somebody could have is to be a regular Black person, basically saying the worst thing that could happen is they could end up like your ass out there in the theater watching the movie. What are you telling me?
Right.
I don't understand.
Is that movie for me?
How
is
you,
that movie
you
for me?
I mean?
You're telling me that, like, well, your regular boring nigga ass is like, you know,
sucks to be you.
The worst punishment.
It's like,
sucks
what?
Sucks to be you, dog.
So
hope you like my movie.
Yes. Like, make a movie where, you know, I mean, again, I don't know what he was talking about, where he was saying, I'd like to make a movie about Black love down the line, but like, make a movie about Black people. Be just it, like living life, you know, like when people are, I know people got up in arms about Cord Jefferson's speech. I understood what he was saying. I understood what other people were saying. I'm able to pick up both sides. But I'll tell you what, if you said I could watch the American Society of Magical Negroes and I could watch Juice, if you're saying I could watch the American Society of Magical Negroes and I could watch Set It Off, if you're telling me I could watch the American Society of Magical Negroes and I could watch Fresh, or I could watch Boys in the Hood, or I could watch Dead Presidents, or all day.
Right.
I don't, you know what I mean? Like these concepts and conversations about not even just respectability, but like what imagery we put on the screen, or like what we do in terms of like, you know, presenting ourselves. I think at the end of the day, are the Black characters in your piece human beings? Do they have autonomy? Is there a level of empathy shown towards them? And as a Black person, can I recognize them as either parts of myself or people that I know? Then you
right.
got
and
it. I don't.
Does this like carry weight in my life?
Like Michael K. Williams, rest in peace, one of the greatest actors that we had, like said very explicitly, I want to play characters that are often invisible in society. I want to play Black people that people often overlook. I want to be Omar. I want to be, you know, right. like these Black queer characters and like all these, I want to play these roles because we don't see these people, or when we do see these people, they're reduced to like basically caricatures. When I know these people in real life, I've met these people, I know
right.
what they're
full
like
lives these people have,
you know what I mean? So like diminishing yeah. people down to tropes, stereotypes, characteristics, like look, do we need 20 slave movies? No, but I'm also not against a slave movie that has a message or an idea about it and presents enslaved people as three-dimensional human beings. Do we need another right. Hood movie? I liked Belly. It's not a great movie, but look, you know what I mean? At least it was more visually interesting and stimulating than this film. Like, if you're
for
giving
sure.
me the choices
I
between...
I would watch Belly over this, yeah.
if you're giving me choices
again.
Between those movies that are presenting quote-unquote stereotypical Black people and this movie, I would rather watch Tupac tell Omar Epps, I don't give a fuck. Over hey, and over and hey. Over again before I watch this movie. like this
is, right.
That's
right.
That's what I'm saying. So like even you know, when people are like, oh well, you know, like he tried something different, or you know, well, what do you want? Another slave movie, another like, is it good?
Is it gonna be good?
Does it talk to Black, you know, like I don't want just general.
Does it talk to my life?
Yeah.
Does it talk to my life and people I know? Because honestly, this Magical Negroes movie doesn't contain anyone I know or anyone's or politics that I'm familiar with.
They're about to put the Underground Railroad on the Criterion Collection. Would you rather that
That's
not
right.
exist? Like, you know what I mean?
That's what this movie wants. This movie wants, like, this movie thinks about the Underground Railroad like, hey, it's a little It's a little on the nose.
And the white people are getting a little uncomfortable over here. Maybe
they're getting a little uncomfortable. You don't want to remind them about slavery all the time, do we? Like, you know, maybe soften it a little bit, bring it back.
I'm just thinking about those Key and Peele skits and like all those other things. Like there was you could have done like such a funny Uncle Remus. You could have done like these hilarious characters that like where you could have really turned it to like 11 and gone crazy.
Those parodies, the parodies of Green Mile and Bagger Vance that exist in the movie are like so unfunny.
They're straight, they're just doing the movie.
Just showing, they're just doing the movie. But if I'm going into this movie knowing about the magical Negro trope, if I understand that as the thing that it is, then let's turn that Bagger Vance parody up to 11. Let's go. Like, yes. I know what the Green Mile is. Let's do the joke already. Like, and this movie just wants to be like, well, that existed. And maybe they had a point.
Well, I think we've reached our point here. I've given this movie too much headspace. I feel like I've gotten a lot of things off my chest, which is nice. Thanks again to Aisha for coming on and talking with us too. Really appreciate that. Cameron, we've got some news for people who may not be aware. Tell people a little bit about what we got coming up.
We're taking this show on the road, baby. If you like White People Won't Save You as a podcast, get ready for the live show. It is coming to a city near you if you live on the East Coast.
Yes.
It is coming to, we got dates for the Brooklyn Comedy Collective in Brooklyn, New York, The Crown in Baltimore, Maryland, and Caveat NYC in Manhattan. We have dates and tickets and all those details will come out very, very soon.
Mm-hmm.
Probably pretty soon after this podcast gets uploaded. But yeah, we're gonna, you know, there will be games. We're hoping to have a couple guests, some really fun guests. And yeah, you'll get to see us. And actually, we're gonna bring some of these crazy, crazy clips that we describe over the podcast. We're gonna bring them directly to you so you can see it yourself.
Yep.
We will have the DVD of White Man's Burden on Decky.
Got to see it.
You know that it actually exists. Okay.
So look out for us.
You can see it with your eyes like we saw it.
Yeah, we'll be hitting the road in April and May. So be on the lookout for that. Again, dates and tickets coming soon. But yeah, thank you so much for listening to us. You can find us on Twitter, white_pod. And you can also write to us at whitepeoplewon'tsaveyoupod@gmail.com. Cameron, tell people where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter and IG at TheBlipster1138. Still doing stuff behind the scenes, but hoping, you know, very soon I have something to tell you. I'm working behind the scenes on multiple projects. So nice. Hopefully there will be an abundance soon.
And same for me, making these comics happen, working on these projects. But you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at JRSOSA18, JRSOSA18. That's going to do it for us. Please do not go see the American Society of Magical Negroes. See any other movie. There's plenty of good movies that are out or are coming out that will probably be just better for you to watch. So,
yeah.
All right. We'll catch y'all next time. Peace.
Peace.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.
You can't save us.
We don't want to be saved.